It's 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, and time for NBC's regular weekday morning European Roundup. Here are on-the-spot reports direct from the belligerent capitals, Berlin and London. And later we'll hear from Earl Godwin in Washington. But first, to Germany. Go ahead, Berlin.
Hello, NBC. This is Theodore Knaut speaking from Berlin. The communique that was issued yesterday after the visit of the Yugoslav statesman to Adolf Hitler at his mountain home in Berchtesgaden was about as noncommittal as it is possible to make such a statement, and official circles here refuse to go beyond it in commenting on the meeting. The communique is as follows. Quote, "The Führer yesterday received the Yugoslav Minister President Dr. Cvetkovic and the Foreign Minister Cinzar Markovic in the presence of Foreign Minister von Ribbentrop in the Berghof. The conversations concerning questions of mutual interest were conducted in the spirit of the traditional friendly relations of the two countries," end quote. As to these friendly relations, we are reminded that from the beginning, Germany and Yugoslavia have been on good terms, both commercially and politically. Yugoslavia's attitude toward the Third Reich has been correct at all times and showed understanding for German needs. And Germany rendered valuable services in straightening out relations between Yugoslavia and Italy in times past. The meeting has again centered attention on the Balkans, and it is possible that further meetings with Bulgarian statesmen this time will follow. Meanwhile, it is reported that England, after having broken off relations with Romania, has sent ultimatums to Hungary and Bulgaria to make their attitude clear. But as to such rumors, nothing is said in official circles here, where they are regarded as a sign of England's nervousness about impending events in southeastern Europe. She will make little impression there, it is said here. And Turkey, which has been reported as letting her warning voice be heard, is no longer the power in the Balkans that it was a generation ago, official commentators say, who add that they know nothing officially. The British attempted a daylight raid on Channel ports yesterday, but, so the Germans report, they were seen in good time and intercepted halfway across the water, where a big air fight developed, in the course of which the British were driven back to their island with the loss of 9 Spitfires, while the Germans claimed no casualties on their side. At night, the British flew into western Germany, but we are told did no damage of a military nature, merely causing some fires and killing and injuring civilians. The Germans, on their part, continued their attacks on British positions in northern Africa and on the Suez Canal, which is reported as closed to traffic because of ships sunk in the middle of the channel. London and a number of airports were again attacked by strong German air forces last night, according to the German communique, and a series of severe explosions and big fires could be observed as a result. The most interesting point about the Italian communique is the attempt of British parachute troops to effect a landing on Italian soil. An account of their exploit is given in the German radio bulletin, according to which their objective was to destroy the roads, bridges, and waterworks in Calabria and Lucania. They landed at 2 a.m. and sought cover under the camouflage screens covering the waterworks, but had been observed by peasants who called in the carabinieri, and these took the Britishers prisoners, finding them armed with light machine guns and provided with explosives. Nothing is said about how many there were of them, but their attempt evidently did not succeed. From Romania comes a report that the government there has ordered the diplomatic representatives of what is here called the sham government of the Netherlands to leave, as their government is not recognized by the Antonescu regime in Romania. In Norway, Quisling has addressed the Norwegian press, telling his hearers that a new journalism based on the truth and not on propaganda lies would be introduced in Norway. From Holland, the German paper in the Netherlands brings further reports of disturbances and instances where alleged insolence was shown to the German authorities. Dutch National Socialists have been attacked by Jews, it is said, and the Jewish quarter in Amsterdam has been roped off and the residents forbidden to enter or leave. Non-Jewish residents are now being removed, and a Jewish council has been appointed, headed by A. Asher and Professor Cohen. In Norway, according to the German paper there, Ronald Fangen, a Norwegian author, has been in protective custody, and a nurse, Kaja Finstad, who had reported that he was being ill-treated, has now been taken in protective custody, too. It is said that she lied about the Gestapo. This is Theodor Knaut speaking from Berlin and returning you to NBC.
You've just heard NBC's correspondent reporting from Berlin. Well, now let's turn to the British Isle. Go ahead, London.
This is John McVain in London. London had one short raid alarm this morning. Anti-aircraft guns in an East Anglian coast town went into action when a lone raider approached and British fighters were seen chasing it out over the sea. Some bombs were dropped on an East Coast town. German raids on Britain last night were heavier than on recent nights, but none of them was on a large scale. Bombs fell in eastern England, the home counties, and London, but today's communique says casualties were few. Hundreds of incendiaries were showered on London, but fire watches put out or controlled the blazes as soon as they began. It is believed that one raider was brought down with a heavy gunfire. Industrial targets in the rural region of Germany were among the objectives attacked by British bombers during the night. Observers on the Channel coast saw the flashes and heard the explosions of a British bombing raid on the invasion ports. The attacks seemed to be in the Calais and Boulogne areas. Mr. Alexander, First Lord of the Admiralty, speaking at Bath yesterday, let slip the information that the British, on Thursday, captured a few enemy ships, presumably Germans. He gave no details. Informed quarters in London are watching the Far Eastern situation closely today, but no sensational developments are expected immediately. It was stated in London today that, quote, soldiers dressed in recognized military uniform have recently been dropped by parachute in southern Italy. Their instructions were to demolish certain objectives connected with forts in that area. No statement can be made at present about the result of the operation, but some of the men have not returned from their base. End of quote. That statement is all that we are allowed to reveal about British parachutists at the moment. From an examination of Balkan and other sources in London, you can get what seems to be a fairly balanced picture of the probabilities and the possibilities of a German thrust in southeastern Europe. At the moment, Turkey's unwillingness to commit herself in advance is creating an indecision in the Balkans that is playing into German hands. It seems very probable that Turkey won't fight unless she herself is attacked, and it doesn't seem likely she would consider German penetration of Bulgaria or an attack on Salonika as a direct threat to herself. But if Turkey does fight, then Yugoslavia will surely fight. And it's very probable that a German attack on Salonika would bring Yugoslavia into the war. A good guess would be that the visit of the Yugoslavian ministers to Berlin is concerned with this probability. The Yugoslavian army is good, but it lacks equipment and has only about 600 first-line fighters and bombers to ward off a German air attack. The big difficulty at the moment in patching up an alliance between Turkey, Greece, Yugoslavia, and possibly Bulgaria and Russia is that Germany would take such an alliance as provocation for war. None of the Balkan nations has any illusions about Germany not attacking any Balkan nation at any time she wants to, regardless of excuses. But they all hesitate to make an alliance that would set off the explosion, even though the alliance is their only chance for resistance. The victories of Greece against Italy have undoubtedly stiffened the Balkans against Germany. But in the case of Yugoslavia, resistance against a German attack would mean that the Yugoslavian army would at once have to let the Germans overrun at least a third of the country, including Belgrade, while Yugoslavian resistance was organized in the hilly region that could be defended. The Bulgarians are very emphatic about their wish to stay neutral, a forlorn hope in the present situation. From very good sources, I've learned that when the Italian attack on Greece began, Germany and Italy tried to persuade Bulgaria to launch an attack against Salonika. Even though the Axis prospects of a quick victory looked bright, and Graziani's army was threatening the British position in Egypt, the Bulgarians refused to march and flatly told the Axis they had no wish to enter the war. But with the German tourists filtering into the country daily, some Balkan observers believe the only way Bulgaria can rid herself of German control is by a revolution and a change of government that would throw Bulgaria under Russian protection. The Balkans as a whole have for various reasons more admiration and respect for America than for any other nation. They feel that if America enters the war, an Axis defeat is certain, and American support for Britain has, as much as any other factor, contributed to stiffening the Balkans against Germany. None of the Balkan nations has anything but praise for the attitude of America toward them after the last war, and returning emigrants have spread far and wide tales of America's power and richness. If America were in the war, the Balkans would probably chance a fight with Germany, trusting that if they were defeated, Britain and the United States would recreate them after the war is over. This is John McVane in London, returning you to the National Broadcasting Company in New York.
NBC's American War Reporter has just brought you the latest news from London. And now here is Earl Godwin speaking from the NBC newsroom in Washington.
Good morning, folks. That news about Japan, which had us all worried here for the last 24 hours, news this morning, if correct, is a bit reassuring because from London comes the story that Hitler has not been successful in his attempt to prod the Japanese government into starting off on a general ravaging expedition southward, one that would start an Asiatic Far East World War, one that would embroil the British possessions and the Dutch East Indies. But the Japanese editors have been a little smart, or we might say one-sided, or perhaps tricky. You know, when the president the other day told us at the press conference that aid to Britain would not be interrupted by a possible war with Japan, he also naturally had to say, somebody jumped up and asked him, and he had to say that he did not expect any clash with the Japanese, so the Japanese press have made a great deal out of the second answer, that the Beano didn't expect any war, but forgot to inform their readers that the president said that even if the pressure boys do manage to start the Japanese fighting with us in Asia or anybody else, and if this country does have to get into the fight with Japan, the aid to Britain will continue. You know, you ought to know, I think, that the main British strategy, the anti-Nazi strategy, is to defeat Hitler in Europe, not to be diverted to a major Asiatic war and thus weaken the anti-Nazi moves. And also, this government intends to keep up its tough attitude toward the Japanese and help prevent Japan from moving southward. Diplomatic information this morning is that it's this tough attitude on the part of the United States, Great Britain, Dutch East Indies, and so forth, which so far really has deterred Japan from taking that move that the Germans say they would like to have them take. Meantime, as a bit of diplomatic gossip here in Washington, I understand the Yugoslav government would like to know whether or not this American government would send aid to Yugoslavia and how much aid to Yugoslavia in case it is attacked. That brings up the tinderbox situation. The Yugoslav government would like to stand off the Nazis. If you look at the map, you'll see that Yugoslavia stands athwart the pathway to Greece. The Yugoslavs have a plan, which may or not be carried out, but it's a part of the gossip here. If attacked, if the Germans want to use Yugoslavia as their route to Greece, thus wipe out that bastion of the democracies, the Yugoslavs would immediately give up their outlying provinces and retire with its army to that mountain gorge that runs right down almost the center of Yugoslavia, and thus keep the Germans at bay. I am told by a diplomatic gentleman that Yugoslavia would practically leap to arms if a spokesman for this country would announce that American aid would be forthcoming. At least such an announcement would stiffen their backbone. As it is, in Washington, there seems to be news from over there indicating a state of flux. Nobody seems to know what's going on or what's going to happen. Here in Washington, Uncle Sam is permitted to borrow $16 billion more. The Senate lifted that debt limit yesterday from $49 to $65 billion. The House had already done so, and before the first stages of the war are complete, predicts Senator Wheeler of Montana, we will have a debt of $100 billion. The debt limit was lifted in a single afternoon of heated colloquy, and while nobody voted against it, the debt was filled with warnings, such as Senator Byrd of Virginia, who said that in all these peacetime years, no effort has been made to reduce the non-defense spending and that we should have a general investigation of our entire fiscal policy. That's all the news I have time to say this morning. Earl Godwin says goodbye. That's the news from Washington at this time.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.